Want more stories in your life without adding to your TBR? That's where Audible comes in. I use it for the original novellas, the Plus catalog like Gianna Rayburn's Veronica Speedwell series, and those audiobook sales that you can beat. Right now, Audible has a special offer for new and returning members. Click the link in the show notes to see what deal you'll get and start listening today.
Hi, Laura. Welcome to What Trinix Podcast.
Hi, Laura. Thanks again for having me. I always love chatting with you.
I am so excited to chat with you. We were just chit-chatting before this episode, catching up, because it's been a while. Lots of things have been happening. And so I'm so excited for you to come back and talk literary fiction recommendations for our listeners, because as I was telling you, they're popular. People are looking for these recommendations, and I love your reading taste. I love that you actually adapted to my reading taste, which is literary fiction for beginners, where I have like a unique angle that will entice me to read it as someone who is intimidated by literary fiction. So I really appreciate this. It doesn't have to be beginner, but it just feels friendlier to get started.
Yeah. Well, and I don't want anyone to be afraid of literary fiction out there, because I do think there are a lot of titles that are very accessible. I guess that's the word I would use. And maybe that's what you're trying to say, like books that are really easy to kind of jump into, you know, and that go down real smooth. And so those are the recommendations that I've brought today. I feel like they will delight, inform, and or entertain you and all of your listeners this fall. And they're all written by women. And that was intentional on my part. I love to celebrate women's voices here with you. So all female writers.
I love this. And so it's shimmering. All I want is female voices. We need to empower them. We need to platform as many female voices as possible. And many of the men should go to therapy or go with therapy or any other. We should tear off their microphones too. Like go and reflect on life among yourself.
Amen. So, I got you.
Yep. So before we get started, one of the things I've noticed from you is that you've been involved in the local level for your library. You're working up large, you live in a large library system in Wisconsin. And so I want you to talk about that experience of being involved in the library from a, how do you say, but essentially someone who's like actually like advocating for literacy. Yep. And for its services and whatnot. What does it mean to be like not a librarian, actually a regular person, how to get involved? Because I think that's something that's valuable in this world where we're actually, a lot of the services have been cut and a lot of things. And so our job is to actually not just be good custodians of the library, but also actually help and support and advocate however we can. So
I love that you asked me that question, because I could talk about public libraries all day. I've been a longtime supporter of my local public library. Obviously, I'm a huge reader. I'm a writer myself. But I feel like in the last few years, it's become even more critical for me to support the library, because I feel like in many ways, public libraries are our last bastion of democracy in this country. Mm-hmm. They're open to anyone. You don't have to buy anything to be there. You can stay there as long as you want. You can have access to ideas and authors and titles and all sorts of media resources. I mean, libraries are really where it's at. And what's funny is I got my start really volunteering actively for my public library system just by posting on Instagram. So as my handle is Laura at the library with little underscores in between each of the words. And for years, I would post my library hauls and I would tag my local public library when I wrote book reviews, when I'd taken the library book out. And they started to take notice of it. So literally, it was my Instagram posts that got the attention of the Madison Public Library. And I got a phone call out of the blue one day. This was probably in like 2019, maybe 2020. It was before the pandemic. So a handful of years ago. And I got invited to serve on the Lunch for Libraries Planning Committee. And this is a huge special event for the Madison Public Library. We just had in April, I think it was my fifth or sixth Lunch for Libraries. I'm the co-chair now. We had Abraham Verghese, author of The Covenant of Water.
Oh, my gosh.
We had more than 900 people attend, and it's all in support of the public library. So Lunch for Libraries was sort of my entree, if you will, into volunteering for the library. And since then, I've become an ambassador for the Wisconsin Book Festival, which is under the umbrella of the Madison Public Library Foundation. And I'm also a board member for the Madison Public Library Foundation. And I really feel like they've seized upon my passion about this and my desire to work and to do things for the library. And so every time they ask me to do something, I just say yes. But, you know, there are a lot of other ways to get involved. The library branches in Madison, they always need people to come in and help shelf books and that kind of stuff. So there are great hands-on opportunities to support local public libraries across the country. When you and I were chatting, you also mentioned like the Friends organizations. Friends organizations are huge. We have one here in Madison, and we have multiple, actually one for each library branch. And they coordinate used book sales, and all of those proceeds go right to that library branch. Those are great ways to really make a difference. And again, I think in this day and age, to be able to do something tangible to support your local library and to know that you're supporting literacy and books and ideas and storytelling and, you know, access to titles, I think is so important. So if anyone has any questions about getting involved at the local level, shoot me a message, like direct message me, and I can share my experiences. But I would say reach out to your local public library and see what the needs are and how you can make a difference.
Yeah. And you can start promoting it with your Instagram.
Absolutely.
And sharing your library hauls. I was telling in another episode with the librarian, I was like, you can pre-order your books by requesting it for your local library to purchase. Yes. They may not purchase every single one, but they know that their people want those books, and they might try to grant those access, and they might order more books based on the demand of those books. So it's a great place to, when times are tough and literacy is like, it's at an all-time low. I think this is like a great place for one. You don't have to go to Barnes & Noble to pre-order your books. You can just go request them. Yes, there might be a limit of how many you can request at a time, but you can get started and you can get them for free. When I was in New York City and I used to use the New York Public Library, I used to request them, and I'll have the day of publication, they'll have like those physical books ready to go in my whole space. Like, it was just fun. I was like, in this space. And some libraries, like my local library in Hillsboro, they have a list of, like, they have a page where it's what they already are on order. So you can make those whole requests. So you can be like, hey, they already ordered this. Let me just be the first one in the whole list or the first few. And order as many. There's many times they have limits, but for physical books, they really are more flexible. And a lot of times, if you're worried about the fines, a lot of libraries have moved away from fines. It's okay. You're not delinquent. Like, we'll work with you. Absolutely. I think that's the worry. It's like, I'm going to be fine. It's not. It's okay.
It is okay. Our library system, to that point, also got rid of fines, which is hilarious because I joke around that, like, they used to make so much money off me because all of my books were late all the time.
Yeah.
And then I just started donating more to the library. So it worked out in the end. Yeah. But if it makes you feel any better, or your listeners feel any better, like, my books are overdue all the time. Like, I get these huge stacks, and it's really hard to stay on top of my library management, if you will.
Yeah.
And it's fine. It's not a big deal. You do what you can.
Yeah. And there's more than Libby. I think a lot of times our listeners may just be focusing on Libby and Holds and stuff, but there's actual physical libraries where you
absolutely
can go. Libraries have Wi-Fi. They have access to newspapers, magazines, and other resources. And they're fair places. Again, as you say, you don't have to pay. Because even Starbucks used to be a third place, and no longer they expect you to buy a coffee. And libraries are a place where you don't have to. You can work. If you're a remote worker, you actually need to work on something, there's a place for it. And they even have rooms. And they have other resources other than books. Like, check your local library for games and seeds and things that you're like, you may not think your library has.
Yep.
You have it.
That's totally true. Yeah, that's a really good point. Like, our library here in Madison, you can check out state parking passes. So you can go use a state park using the pass and then you return it. I mean, it's great services. It keeps people connected. It's community.
Yeah. If you're in a big city, you might have culture passes and like access to museums and stuff. So like things, just check your local library for resources.
Absolutely.
And if your library doesn't have resources, ask what do they need to do? Like, do they need more funding? Like, how can you advocate? Whether funding is like you call your representative, your city council and be like, please do not cut my budget. There's ways you can advocate for that. Yeah. So we don't have to be so powerless.
Absolutely. That's a great point. Yeah.
Yeah. Awesome. Thank you for indulging me in library talk. I feel like at any time we talk about libraries, it's just that we need to just keep talking about them.
You're never in, like, it has nothing to do with indulging. I would talk about libraries for hours. I think there's, and I think for listeners out there who don't have a public library card, the place to start is to get a library card.
Yeah.
Start and, there.
And check if you work in a different county, check if they allow you to get a library card from a different county because you may pay some taxes too. I had that issue when I was in New York City. I live in New Jersey, proud New Jersey. I live in Jersey City. And I work in New York City, and I was paying New York taxes, I was able to get Brooklyn, Queens, and New York Public Library Life cards. And those are great systems to have.
Wow.
And you can check it, like, some libraries allow you, if you work in the county, or they have some benefits, they may allow you to actually get a library card, secondary library card.
Okay, that's amazing. That's really cool.
So, yeah. All right. So, we're going to check some book recommendations. You got yourself, we got about 8 recommendations here, all written by women, all juicy and fun. I'd share one of your recommendations has been recommended by multiple sources, and I actually borrowed it, and then I was like, and let it lapse. So now, like, I need to just actually borrow it again because it's coming from you. So I know I'm going to love this book. So let's start with the recommendations.
Sure. And I just want to reiterate, too, I have 8 of them, and I feel like they're all very different. And so I hope that there's kind of something for everyone, depending on what your listeners like. They're all literary fiction. Some are a little bit lighter than others, but I think I touch on a lot of different things. So I hope you like them.
I'm excited for these.
Okay. Get ready to add to your TBRs. Okay. So we're going to start off with a new book. It just came out, I don't know, maybe a couple months ago, and it's called, it's a long title here, Maggie or A Man and a Woman Walk into a Bar by Katie Yee. So it has kind of like a whimsical title, and it has a very cute front cover. But I will say that Katie Yee's debut novel just about broke my heart. And I mean that in the best way possible. I had a real emotional response to it. So we have an unnamed narrator living in an unnamed city. And she has 2 little kids, and she's told by her husband out of the blue one day that he is leaving her for this woman named Maggie that he's met through work circles. So he starts moving out, and at the same time, our unnamed narrator finds out that she has a tumor in her breast. She has breast cancer. And she decides to name her tumor. I didn't know that people do this, but she does. She names the tumor Maggie also, because why not? So this is sort of her foundation for starting to rebuild and repair her imploded life. So I know it sounds terribly depressing, and there's some hard subject matter that Katie Yee tackles, obviously. But I promise that there is humor and there's beauty and there's redemption in this novel. And the way that she structured it also makes it incredibly easy to read. So it's not in chapters. She almost gives us like these little meditations, if you will, or like little vignettes. Some are just a couple paragraphs long. Others are a couple pages long, but they're all very short and digestible. So I like that short and sweet nature when you're reading the book because it is big topics. The highlight of the book for me is Darlene, who is the best friend of our unnamed narrator. And she is delightful, and she's a character I will not ever forget. She kind of swoops in and saves the day again and again. She goes with our unnamed narrator to her doctor's appointments. They sit in the lobbies of these doctor's offices together. She takes her to the bookstore. They go on walks with her dog. And she's so lovely that my takeaway from this book is really that it's a love letter to friendship, to female friendship. Particularly your best friend. When you think of that one person that can save you and keep you from drowning, that's definitely Darlene. So above all, I think that Maggie, or A Man and a Woman Walk into a Bar, is a reminder that no matter how crappy life gets, we can search for salvation in the cracks and actually find it. So beautiful book.
I'm adding this one. I feel like I've seen the cover. It's like bright green with, yes, it looks like a, like something like a monster. It's something like, I don't know.
It's
like
got little on it. If you hearts.
Yeah.
They're kind of symbolic of the story. If you look at how many hearts there are. Yeah. So the cover's like pink and green and it's very bright.
Yeah.
And again, kind of whimsical along with this really quirky title. And there's some whimsy and quirkiness in the book itself, but
yeah,
it really digs deep in a really profound way.
Yes. I think this will wreck me, but I think it'll be a positive experience that I
You'll
need.
Be okay. Because it ends, I don't give away any spoilers, but like I said, there's a lot of redemption and there's hope too. So keep that in mind.
All right. So now we're going to talk about The Most.
Yep. So The Most by Jessica Anthony is a book I want to talk about next. So I love a good epic. I love throwing myself into big books, 400, 500 pages. But this is the opposite of that. I also love books that say so much using so few words. So that's what this one is. Like, it's 133 pages. That's it. And so you ask, like, well, what could possibly happen in just 133 pages? And my answer for you is everything. So keep that in mind. So this novel opens on a strangely warm morning in November in Delaware in 1957. So we're going back in time quite a bit, which gives it a very classic kind of old school vibe, which I love. And our main character is Kathleen, and she's this tall, striking woman. She was a tennis champion when she was in college, and now she's the mom of two young boys. And on this strangely warm morning in November, she pulls out her old red swimsuit from college. She hasn't put it on in a long time, and she decides to slide into the swimming pool in her apartment complex. She sits there all day in the water. And her husband starts to get increasingly frantic, like, please get out of the water, Kathleen. And she just kind of ignores him, even as the sun begins to set. So we have this entire day spent in a swimming pool. But we get the backstory of Kathleen's marriage to her husband, Virgil, including all the secrets and the lies that are simmering between them. And let me tell you, there are some doozies. So this story is really aching. It's also tender. But it weaves in these really strange, like, different threads. And Jessica Anthony does such a good job. She brings in tennis. She brings in jazz music. She brings in bridges. And yes, I said bridges, which is a strange element to have in a book. But the totality of all of these things woven together is stunning. And she has this very kind of quiet, devastating style. It's very spare and slim. And I feel like this book will be a new American classic. At least it should be, in my opinion.
Oh my gosh. You've had me at a short book. You had me at a whole thread of things. And I'm like, wait, whole day in the swimming pool?
Yep.
Like, what can we have? And I think I'm just intrigued. I think this will be a perfect end of the year book. As someone who doesn't have like the time to do the big epic stories.
Yep.
This is like a short novella. Then it actually packages the punch.
Perfect. Yeah, that's a great way to end the year. That's a really good point. With the busyness of the impending holidays and all of that, this would be a lovely book to savor. And it goes down real easy. So good option.
Awesome. Now we got The Correspondent.
Okay, The Correspondent by Virginia Evans. So if you haven't seen The Correspondent on Instagram, I'm shocked because it is definitely a Bookstagram darling. And I will just say that I usually approach Bookstagram darlings very warily. I'm always a little careful because I wonder, like, well, are they worth the hype or are they not? I will tell you that this one is 100% worth the hype. So I think in general that epistolary novels are always fun. And of course, these are novels that are told through letters, sometimes emails or sometimes other correspondence. I've always loved epistolary novels. My favorite to date has been 84 Charing Cross Road by Helene Hanneth, which if you haven't read, you should absolutely do that. But now I have a new contender as my favorite. I think it might be The Correspondent. Like, it's so lovely and
just gut-wrenching that I was sitting in a doctor's office lobby when I finished it, and I burst into literal tears. I mean, I'm sitting there, like, mopping my face in the doctor's office with tissues. It was amazing. So this novel is built around letters written by and to a woman named Sybil Van Antwerp. And at 73, Sybil is a mother, a grandmother, a retired lawyer, and a divorcee. And she's kind of set in her ways. She's pretty stubborn, but she's also super smart and very warm-hearted, deeply kind, right? So she's really unforgettable as a character. She's one of my most favorite characters of any book I've read in 2025. But Sybil now is faced with some unforeseen opportunities for connection and reconnection that sort of blow apart her very quiet life in Annapolis, Maryland, which is where she lives. So Virginia Evans writes gorgeously about the ways that we let each other down and also the ways that we save each other. So again, there's a lot of hope, a lot of redemption. And the bonus here is that Sybil herself in the book is an avid reader. And so there are so many references to authors and books, including 84 Charing Cross Road. So when I came to that reference, I was like, are you kidding me? Like, this is a full circle moment. I loved it. It's delightful.
Oh my gosh. I am excited for this one. And I'll tell you why. In my early 20s, I went to school at University of Maryland College Park for my grad work. And I used to travel to Annapolis as a cute little town just to get out of the city, hustle and bustle. And so I have like really warm feelings about Annapolis because it's such a cute town. It's by the water. It's a big bay. There's a Naval Academy, but it's just this cute small town that's like stuck in this like place. At least it was in the 2000s. And like any book that takes me there, I'm like, it transferred me to that memory that I had in my early 20s. I was like, I'm never living in a small town. And yes, true, I haven't lived in a small town, but it was like I had to go to a small town to get that little feeling for it.
Yeah. Oh, that's great. Well, when you read it, I would love to know what you think of it because there are some really touching scenes that take place by the water. So I think it'll
get by and stuff. And I'm glad that you're putting my, because I've seen The Correspondent on Bookstagram. I've seen it over and over. And I'm like, I don't really want to read this. Is it hype up? Is it truly hype or not? And as the purpose of this podcast, having humans reading these books and recommending them, raving about it. And so I trust your judgment that this is not overhyped, that this is all first.
No, it is such a moving story. It is very affecting. You find out some pretty big things that happened to Sybil when she was younger.
Yeah.
And I dare you to read this book without crying, you know. Yeah. Books that make me cry, I guess I mentioned that it makes me cry because I feel like when a book can generate that kind of emotional response, there's something there. It doesn't shy away from grappling with the big things.
Yeah, I appreciate that. Yeah. All right, we got to go to Hazel Says No.
Yes, Hazel Says No by Jessica Berger Gross. So switching topics totally. So this is a debut from Jessica Berger Gross that is timely and fresh and like wickedly disturbing. And I feel like the story could be plucked right from the headlines right now, which is kind of sad, but that's the way it is. So the main character is Hazel Bloom, and she's this bookish, super smart, rising senior in high school. And her family has just moved from Brooklyn to a small college town in Maine for her dad's job as a professor. And Hazel is pissed because here she's just like, she's having to move her senior year of high school. But over the summer, they settle into this new community and things are kind of starting to look up for Hazel until something really horrible happens to her on the very first day of school at this brand new school. So it will make your jaw drop, although maybe not again in this day and age, who knows. But everything kind of goes haywire for Hazel and her family. She has two parents and a little brother. And we get to climb into each one of their heads throughout this story. So I love kind of the shifting points of view here. But it's funny and it's incisive. And I feel like you'll laugh, you'll sniffle, you will be enraged above all. And I mean that in a very healthy way. You'll be enraged. But you'll also be really inspired by Hazel because I think she's the hero
that we all need right now.
Gosh, the hero that we need right now. And I think in this day and age, sometimes we just need to have somebody to root for.
Yes. So. You will absolutely root for her. Her story is bananas.
Yes.
But it's great. Yeah.
Awesome. To the Moon and Back.
By Eliana Ramage. So again, another debut novelist. So she is a citizen of the Cherokee Nation, and she spent more than a decade writing this book. And I think it's just going to be fun. So it's about ambition, belonging, and family. And the novel centers on a young Cherokee woman named Steph Harper. And the book starts with her. She's little, and her mom is fleeing her abusive husband in Texas and taking Steph and her little sister, Kayla, to Cherokee Nation in Oklahoma, where she hopes they will all like finally fit in and belong. But what's funny is that Steph grows up and wants nothing more than to get away from Oklahoma. And specifically, she wants to train to be an astronaut with NASA and ultimately go to the moon one day. So this book is a big one. It spans three decades and several continents and encompasses Steph's very turbulent journey, along with the lives of the three women who are closest to her. And of course, that's her mom, who has a secret of her own, her little sister, Kayla, who's an artist that goes on to become an indigenous social media influencer, and Steph's college girlfriend, Della, who strives to reclaim her own Cherokee identity as an adult. So this is a dazzling, heartbreaking story of mothers and daughters, terror and wonder.
You have me. You have me at like female experiences and marginalized female experiences.
Amen.
The ambition and then the terror and the like, just, it's not easy.
No, overcoming all the odds to do something incredible.
Yeah. It's like you got to work twice as hard. Like the thing of the person to micro or macro aggressions and to try to meet all the odds.
So. Absolutely. Yeah.
I'm adding To the Moon and Back to my TBR.
Okay. So. I'm glad to make your pile that much bigger.
Yes. I got 8 books to my TBR. So we're going to go to How to Read a Book, which is, I am curious about this one.
Okay. So this book is by Monica Wood. And I will tell you that I stayed away from this book for a long time because I kind of thought the title was a little... I still think there's a better title out there for this book. And also, I don't love the front cover. It reads to me as sort of saccharine or trite or like too precious or something. And so I didn't think that this book would interest me. But then we read it for one of the book groups that I'm in. And I'm like, all right, I guess I'm giving it a whirl. And I'm so glad I did, because the title and the book cover don't do the story justice at all. So Monica Wood, the author, has this masterful grip on language. Her prose is descriptive. It is heart-wrenching. It is gorgeous. And again, this book brought me to tears multiple times. And it's one of my favorite books of the year. So it's centered on 22-year-old Violet, who has just been released from prison after serving time for a drunk driving crash. And we actually get some scenes in the prison, which... I learned so much from those. There's really a lot to unpack with this book. So she lives in Portland, Maine. She's released and she moves to Portland, Maine. And she tries really hard to rebuild her life. So she's seeking forgiveness. She's trying to find a job. And she starts turning to poetry and books for comfort. And then she also connects with the handyman at the local bookstore. And his name is Frank. And he's an elderly gentleman. And also with a retired school teacher named Harriet. And I'm not going to give anything away here, but these three characters, Violet, Frank, and Harriet, are all connected in some pretty profound ways. What I will tell you is that their storyline never gets cheesy. It never gets saccharine. In fact, I would say the opposite. I would say this book is very unflinching and it bravely tackles some really big things. But the characters are all fully fleshed out. And again, you're cheering for all of them. And it's just a beautiful book. And you won't want to say goodbye to them when it ends. It's really a beautiful story about making amends.
I did not expect this book to be about that.
No, That's what I mean.
Bridal doesn't sell the book. That doesn't sell the book at all.
No, I'll tell you this. The title is a reference. So Harriet, the retired school teacher that I mentioned, she has for a while gone into the prison where Violet has been living. And she has a book group with some of the prisoners. And she teaches them like how to read a book, how to approach literature. And so that's kind of where that reference comes from. But I don't feel that it truly shines. I don't feel it's the best title for the book. So if you can get past that, and if you can get past the cheesy front cover, this book has just knocked my socks off.
Yeah. Like, I'm expecting a very, like, whimsy, how to read a book, like, very, like, literature. We're going to talk about spot, like, things. And I did not expect the story to be about that. You took me by surprise. And I'm like, okay, I appreciate this story. I appreciate the fact of making amends and rebuilding your life and coming from that place of despair and the place of, like, the worst possible place you could be and actually building from the aftermath.
Yeah.
I think this is, like, a powerful book. Like, just...
It's so powerful. And I love the theme, too, of, like, chosen family, creating chosen family, because Violet very much does that.
And yeah.
Yeah. It's unforgettable.
I'm adding this. All right. I thought I was going to skip that one. I was like, oh, okay.
No, it's like a sleeper. Is that what you would call it? Like a book it's that like, just.
Yeah.
And like, I would also say that the author herself, Monica Wood, is like not very active, if at all, on social media. I don't even think she's on Instagram. I think I looked for her. If she is, I can't remember. She doesn't really post anything. And I don't think that helps because I don't feel like it's gotten enough props out there. So it's my job now to sell the world on this book because it's so good.
Yes. All right. We got to talk about People of Means.
Yep. So if you love historical fiction, get ready for this one from Nancy Johnson. It's great. So People of Means is like this slow burn of a novel until suddenly it isn't. And it like veers in this direction that I was not expecting. And it ends in this glorious and disturbing burst of metaphorical fireworks. So again, a book that really surprised me. So it's fiction, of course, but Nancy Johnson did so much research to write this book. And it's the story of a mother and a daughter whose lives are both impacted by the quest for social change. So it's told in alternating perspectives. And we first are introduced to Frida's the mom. But when the book opens, she's not a mom yet. She is a student at Fisk University, which is a real life, historically Black college in Nashville. And it's the late 1950s, early 1960s. And the civil rights movement, of course, is like totally ramping up in Tennessee and beyond. So we get Frida's story then. Then we jump to 1992 to get her daughter's story. And her daughter's name is Tulip. And Tulip lives in Chicago and works in PR. And she's trying very hard to make sense of the Rodney King trial verdict. So there is a lot happening also at that time. So as the book unwinds, Frida and Tulip seem so different at first, but they both are struggling to figure out how much they will risk and even sacrifice in order to follow their convictions. And the decisions they face are not easy or straightforward, but readers by the end of this book will be cheering for both Frida and Tulip as their storylines kind of braid together and create something really spectacular.
I'm adding this.
it's
a weird thing because you triggered the not Rodney King verdict. I remember that very clearly. Early childhood, the 1990s. Yeah. Like, I remember and how much it shifted. Like, it was a systemic shift in politics and where we're going and what was happening in the 90s. And I understand, like, obviously the civil rights era was just a systemic and just as big of a change. And obviously we're still, unfortunately, unfolding, unraveling, and basically taking things away now. But I think these are powerful times in history that social change was making
an impact.
Something that we need now in 2025 is to think about, like, how can we make social change when we are an authoritarianism? Like, how can we actually not feel powerless and despair and actually make an impact when funding gets cut or things or laws are being made or people are getting kidnapped. Like, how can we make a change? And I think right now there's a lot of despair and there's a lot of feeling like, oh, it's just going to happen this way. And I think we got to look back to those eras where actually impact happened, where people were in the streets, where people were fighting and change did happen. And our job is to hold on to that and actually move forward.
I love that you just said that, because I think that's one of the most powerful takeaways from this book, is that whole grassroots movement and the strength that happens when people come together and are willing to put themselves out there. It's really incredible. And so I think if you're looking for a dose of hope and inspiration, this is your book, People of Means, because you'll see how these social movements started, you know, how they got their foothold.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Again, I'm adding this. And then the final book, I told you, it's been my team here. I did borrow it from the library. And then it's a short book. It's 6 hours. It's 6 hour long. It's a short little book. And it's been recommended by multiple sources. Obviously, it's a fan favorite author, Lily King. So, but talk to the heart of the lover.
Ugh. Oh, my gosh. So again, Laura, if you're going to sit down and read this book, Heart the Lover by Lily King, don't just have one tissue handy. Have the whole box. Just a little suggestion for you. Oh, my goodness. This book. So I have loved, like, full disclosure, I've loved all of Lily King's books. I'm a huge fan. I love her storylines, and I love that her novels tend to be kind of slim, like you were saying. They're not big. They're not cluttered. They get right to the heart of the matter with language that both soothes and guts you at the same time. And so I don't know how Lily King does this, but she does. It's like this magical thing that she does. So I was so excited to get my hands on Heart the Lover, which just came out 2025. I was so excited about it, and it does not disappoint. So again, we have another unnamed narrator, and she's in college when the book begins. And I think it's got to be like the 1980s. We don't get an exact year, but I think it's the 1980s. But before we kind of jump into her story, there's like this little page at the beginning of the book, almost like a prologue. And in it, our narrator says, and I quote, "You knew I'd write a book about you someday. I'll never know how you would tell it, but for me, it begins here like this." And those words give me goosebumps.
Yes.
Oh, like, okay, what's happening here? So we jump into the story, and our unnamed narrator is this bookish, smart young woman. She's an English major. She's in this lit class senior year, and she meets these two new young men. She's not met them before in college, Sam and Yash, and they are both seniors also. And she and Sam immediately start crushing on each other, and they start dating. I'm not going to tell you what happens to their relationship, because to tell you more would be to give away spoilers, and I will not give away any spoilers about this book. But I will say this, like all passionate young love, there are some big twists and turns in their romance. And our main character ends up on a path that she was not expecting. So as you said, Laura, this book is not huge, but Lily King packs such a huge punch in so few words. Like, there's so much that remains unsaid, which I'm always just so amazed by when authors can do this. So when we as readers start to like piece together where this story is going, it's just incredible. It's so immensely satisfying. So in Heart the Lover, there's anguish, sex, vulnerability, and such emotional acuity that, like I said, it's just this really satisfying, gratifying read. And again, I repeat, have tissues handy, because it's a doozy, and I really think you'll love it.
I am bumping this one up. I'm going to request it from my library, and I'm going to request a physical copy, because I think that's going to make me read it. Not the ebook, not the audio, like actually send, because it's a short book that I can spend an afternoon reading it and just enjoying the me time.
And just what you said, like spending an afternoon reading it,
you could absolutely read this book in one or two sittings. And it's one that you probably won't want to put down. So to have a few hours to just carve out and sit down and curl up in a cozy blanket, depending on where you live. If you're in Wisconsin, you want the cozy blanket, maybe not in Florida.
No, we got AC. We got air conditioning.
There you go. Okay.
Oh, it's cool.
It's just one to savor. And Lily King is such a great author, and she's so salt of the earth, and she's the real deal, like no bells and whistles. And I love that about her.
I love these recommendations. I do have a curveball question for you.
Yeah.
Because as I was thinking about it, it's like, where did you get these recommendations? Like, who sells those books to you? Like, who is the one telling you? Where do you find them? Because a lot of these titles, I have no idea they existed. And I'm a pretty, publishing heavy of understanding, new titles and new things. But I'm curious, because I'm like, I have no idea how this, well, I'm like, hey, why are they not being promoted to me? Yeah. Obviously, because I'm looking for other titles, but I'm curious to you, and I think our listeners who are dabbling in this world, where do they get the recommendations? Like, where they can find other ones?
So that's a great question. So obviously there's Bookstagram. I'm very active on Instagram, and I'm always seeing what people are reading. But I would say one of my most trusted sources for books like these is a publication called BookPage. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if you've seen BookPage, but you can actually get it at your local public library. Most public libraries carry them for free. And it's like a small little, almost like a newspaper, right? And it comes out monthly. I am an avid BookPage reader. I snap that up as soon as I see it each month. And it's got great recommendations, for new books that are coming out. If you go to a local independent bookstore, you will find monthly copies of Indie Next. I think that's what it's called, Indie Next, right? Those little flyers.
Yeah,
I always snap those up because those have great recommendations too that come from independent booksellers across the country. So that's what I like about that. I would also say, speaking of local bookstores, that I subscribe to a number of newsletters from local bookstores here in my state of Wisconsin. Specifically, Boswell Books in Milwaukee is great. In Madison, there's Mystery to Me. There's also Lake City Books. Anybody can subscribe to these e-newsletters, but what I like about them is that you're getting them on a somewhat regular basis, whether it's weekly or every other week or every month, and they're promoting books that are coming out and also backlist titles. And remember, too, that they're also advertising author events at their stores, which is a great way to get more ideas and to also go check out an author that might be visiting your town. So those are my ways that I primarily hear about new books.
These are brilliant ideas. I was like, damn. And I love this. These are like free ways for you to find information. One, you can sign up to different bookstores, follow them on Instagram. Sometimes they do promote every Tuesday, new releases. And you might help different booksellers who are passionate about different genres and signing up for this newsletter. You don't need to live in the city.
Open
up from them online. Like a lot
absolutely.
Of stores. Libraries, BookPage. I've seen BookPage and I'm like, oh my God. I can wrap this myself.
Grab it. It's awesome. And also actually the Madison Public Library, my library, right next to BookPage, the Madison Public Library quarterly, they do a flyer, fiction new releases and nonfiction. And I always grab those too. And so I don't know what each person out there, what their library does, but look at those resources because they're great resources. And actually I just thought of one more. There is a wonderful website called BookTrib, BookTrib. Check out BookTrib. They have amazing book reviews, author interviews. It's just this wonderful resource for readers, which is a great way to find out about titles.
I love this. Thank you, Laura. As always, tell us where you can find you online.
Find me on Instagram at Laura at the Library with underscores between each of the words. And also my website, which is geared towards my novels for middle graders and their parents. But there's some fun stuff on there. It's laurabirdbooks.com.
Thank you, Laura, for being the show.
My pleasure always. Have me back. I love to chat.
You will come back. You're a contributor. So, listeners, Laura will be back with more recommendations in the near future.
Thanks, Laura.
Thanks for listening to the What to Read Next. For more book lists, cozy reads, and library tips, visit the whattorenextblog.com. Your next great read might be waiting there. Are you an author, publisher, or book-related business looking to reach passionate readers? What to Read Next podcast is a perfect place to connect with an engaged audience of romance and mystery lovers who are always on the hunt for their next great read. Now, we're offering sponsorship opportunities. Whether you're launching a new book, promoting an upcoming release, showcasing a bookish product or services, we can help you get the word out. Let's work together to bring your books or businesses to readers who are ready to discover something new. Please visit whatyoureadnextblog.com/sponsorships to learn more or reach out to chat about the perfect sponsorship or package for you. Thank you so much for listening. Your next great reader is waiting for you.